Now, we were the 13th expedition to go in search of the Lost Squadron, so there was 12 in front of us. So there was a lot of information that was available to us as far as technique, location, how to live on a glacier, a whole bunch of stuff, you know, was available to us. So we capitalized on all the good ideas. Why did we pick Glacier Girl? Well, of all the airplanes, the P-38s and the bombers that landed, this was the only plane where the pilot, Harry Smith, had the presence of mind to shut his engines off and feather the props so that when he landed on the glacier, there's no damage to the engines nor the propellers. And we knew that because we looked at pictures, so that's why we picked this airplane. Now, we looked at the pictures of all the airplanes individually, and we also have an aerial photograph that shows the relative position of one airplane to the other. In 1990, that expedition primarily was going after a B-17 and one P-38. So we had the locations that was only 2 years old from the 90 expedition, so that when we get on the ice cap, all right, we could go right to the last known location. We calculate the drift of the glacier, and then we start to run our radar unit, okay, over the ice cap in those locations. We have to locate all of the airplanes. And the reason why we do that is because if we want this specific one, then we have to, we know the relative position of one to the other, so once you locate them all, you know which airplane is which. Now, we got on the ice cap on the 6th of May, and we left on the 22nd of August with one complete airplane, this one here. The operation was based at a dirt strip called Kulusuk on the east coast of Greenland, and we used the DC-3 on skis and a Dornier on skis to bring all our men, our supplies, and equipment out onto the glacier. We brought out 38,000 pounds of equipment and 6,000 pounds of food to do the operation. Now, logistically, this is a fairly complicated thing because Roy Schaffner, who was the man who financed this, he said, okay, I will finance it. This is the 18th day of February. So from February 18th to the 21st of April, we had to come up with the concept of the operation to do this. We had to design, manufacture, and procure the equipment, have to set it up, test it, package it, and ship it to McGuire Air Force Base. So the expedition itself was done in a very rushed manner. So, you know, we were very fortunate that we didn't forget all the big pieces and what we had to do. The cost of doing this was about $638,000, and that was to go to Greenland, recover the airplane, and move it back to Middlesboro, Kentucky. Let me tell you a little bit about how the operations went on the glacier. The first thing we do is we look at all the airplanes. We use a very low-frequency radar to find the airplane. Okay, and the radar operator, he marks all of the locations. And then once we do that, we take a steam probe and we actually steam down and touch the airplane because we want to confirm where the airplane is. And once we did that, and that took almost 10 days of work on the glacier just to physically locate exactly where this airplane was. And then we could set our equipment up to melt a 4-foot diameter shaft straight down on top of the airplane. Now, we had a little lottery going on about where we would hit the airplane. And we actually hit the plane on the right engine. That's where we touched the plane the first time. So when we melted the big hole, right, we came down it. And it was just about the most perfect place, all right, to where you want to start to make your holes, because later on we have to lift the airplane up out of the hole, and it was just the most perfect place to do it. So we're, you know, quite fortunate right there. So now we've set up our equipment. We're melting our hole. You get a 4-foot diameter melting device. It's like a big giant top. And we have a 900,000 BTU boiler to heat up the hot water that we circulate, all right, through the melting coils to melt the ice. The melting unit went down at a rate of about 2 feet per hour. So it took us over a week of melting just to melt down on top of the airplane. Inside the melting device, we had a 5-horsepower, 16-stage deep well pump to take the melting water out of the hole and bring it to the surface and pump it away. So that facilitated us in melting the hole. We get down to the airplane. We take the melting unit, bring it back up to the surface. We leave the pump in the hole. Because now what we need is a pump down there because the hole wants to fill up with water. So we leave the pump down there, and as the water comes up on top of the airplane, we can turn the pump on and pump it away. Okay, we used hot water, and we melted a room or a cave around the airplane. As big as you see what this airplane is, that's as big as what the hole had to be so that we could get to every piece so we could take it apart. We got the hole finished. We sent a team down every day, and we took the plane apart the way it was put together at the factory. We took the wings off, the engines off, the props off. We took the nose off right here. Tail booms off, tail section was ripped off by the glacier. And so we took it all apart and we brought it up to the surface piece by piece. Now, we started off with 1 4-foot diameter hole, and you're not going to get this airplane a 4-foot hole no matter how good you are, right? So what you got to do is you got to take that melting unit up and send it down a second time and connect those two holes, right? And we were able to bring up the entire airplane up those two holes except for the center section, and that center section runs from here to the same place on the other side, and it's now we have to make a slot that's 20 feet across and 5 feet wide. And once we were able to do that by running the melting device up and down 5 times, then we were ready to bring the center section to the surface. The center section is the main piece of the airplane, so you have to have that. If you don't have that, all the rest of the stuff you have is just pieces. The center section weighs 7,000 pounds. And we took it, put it on its side, and we lifted it from its lowest portion because we had no cranes with us. We had no means of lifting heavy things. So we had to figure out a way to, when we got it up to the surface, to get it out of the hole. So we raised it from its lowest point, and then when we got it up to the surface, we tied cables to the top part, and we just let it fall out. As we lifted it on the bottom, we just let the top of it fall out like that. So literally the airplane fell out of the hole. This took place 22 years ago yesterday, August 1st of 1992. We're on the glacier another, left on 22nd August, so it's another 21 days, cleaning up the camp, and we were waiting for a Sikorsky S-61 helicopter to come in, all right, to pick the center section up to bring it to our base camp in Kulusuk. The 61, we were 76 miles from our base, and the helicopter cost us $75,000, so almost $1,000 a mile to move the center section off the ice cap to our base camp. Now, from there, we took the airplane and we put it on a ship and we sent it to Denmark. Then from Denmark, we went to Sweden. Then from Sweden, we went to Savannah, Georgia, where we put it on a truck and we shipped it to Middlesboro, Kentucky. The airplane arrived in Middlesboro on October 28th of 1992. And that's the day that we say stops, marks the end of the recovery, and now we're going to start the restoration. The plan for the airplane was fairly simple. Since we wanted to fly it, all right, we were just going to take the airplane apart until we take all the broken stuff off, we fix the broken stuff, put it back on, and we'll go flying. Simple as that. Well, after we took all the broken stuff off, we had absolutely nothing left. Every single piece of this airplane was broken. There was not a piece that we could take off, clean, paint, put back on. We replaced every single nut, bolt, screw, rivet, washer on the airplane. The restoration of the airplane took us 10 years almost to the day because we flew it for the first time on October 26th of 2002. So it was a 10-year restoration process. Let me tell you a little bit about the damages that we found. The glacier's pretty heavy, and we were 268 feet inside of it, so you can imagine that every single piece of this airplane in some shape, form, or manner was broken, all right, it was crushed. We had corrosion damage. For example, this nose wheel here, that's made out of magnesium. Magnesium is very unstable in a moist environment. That thing rotted away, you know, so we had corrosion damage, not just the wheel, but a lot of brackets and such in the airplane was that way. We had bullet hole damage. In the right side tail boom, there's an IFF radio, and IFF means identification friend or foe. And it's supposed to have a detonator on it. And from the cockpit, the pilot is supposed to push two buttons, and the thing is going to blow up and destroy this top secret radio. Well, it didn't have the detonator, so Harry Smith took out his 45, and he blasted it full of holes and went through the radio, through the side of the airplane. So he had that kind of damage to have to deal with. The tail boom was ripped off the airplane, and you can imagine we're melting down the tail boom. We get to the end of it, and all you do is see cables going out into the glacier. So we had to melt another 10 feet down that way, all right, to get to the tail and bring that off. Well, from the cockpit up here down to the tail and down the tail booms, there's cables that control the rudders and elevators and the trims and all that other stuff. And while that was being pulled by the glacier, all of those cables were pulling the pulleys out of their brackets, wrecking the bulkheads and everything. So there was a tremendous amount of damage that was done just from that episode. And if anybody ever was concerned about swedging, you know, at the end of a cable, you swedge on a fitting. The fittings, the swedging held, and the cables broke. That's how strong this. The swedging is actually stronger than the cable. So don't worry about it if it's done properly. We got the airplane back to Middlesboro. We start to go out and look for parts because we want to fly it. And we get a lot of work going on just repairing, but we try to find as many pieces as we can to get it to the flyable condition. So we go all different places and buy components and pieces, hatches. We bought some radiators and some radiator cowlings. And we brought it back to the shop and nothing fit. What's going on here? You know, they said it was a P-38 part, but it's not the same. Well, this airplane here, if you look on the side, it says P-38E. This was manufactured as a P-38E. It was converted to an F model to go on Operation Bolero. Now, every P-38 up when we got this, all the other P-38s that were flying around were late models, all right? They're J's and L's. And they're made totally different. They look the same, but they've been improved by quite a bit. So this P-38 was totally different. We started to do our research, and we found out that this was the only P-38 of its kind in the world. Now, that's a good thing, because at that point there, Mr. Schaffner made the decision that we're going to save as much of this airplane as we possibly could. And we did save almost 80% of this airplane. What you see here, you won't see any place else on the face of this earth. This is the only World War II airplane flying today with this from their factory original engines. The propellers are original except for one blade on that side. The guns you see in the nose, there's 450 caliber machine guns, 120 millimeter cannon. That is the only complete set of P-38 guns in the world right there. Matter of fact, tell you a little bit of story about those guns. When we got down to the airplane and we went right to the front of it, you know, and we opened up the gun door, and we found that the guns are armed, the 50s and the 20. So for safety reasons, we took the bullets out. We brought everything to the surface, and we cleaned them all up. And on the 4th of July, we fired those guns using the ammo that was with it for the 50 years. And it all still worked. So it was a pretty exciting day there, especially when you see the cannon blow up a big, giant 55-gallon drum. Matter of fact, I don't know if they'll play it after. I'm hoping they will. I brought the movie, and when this is over, I don't think there's anybody behind us. I think they're going to play the movie, and if so, I feel free to stick around and see what, you know, because we show you shooting the guns there.